Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear mom. Happy birthday to you. And many more. Happy birthday, mom.
And this is Coffee with Crying.
That's right.
Alexi, explain to our listeners why we just sang happy birthday to your mom.
Okay, so it's my mom's birthday, number one.
Okay.
But also, so we started this podcast back in 2020 during the pandemic. We did a lot of episodes for a couple of years, and then we had two children.
We did.
And that slowed things down quite a bit. And my mom has been our number one fan since the beginning. So
she has.
Yeah.
She listens to the episodes that we've recorded from the past many, many, many times over.
Yes.
And we appreciate that, but also sometimes we feel bad. There's no fresh content, as the kids say.
So we were trying to think of like, what could we give my mom for her birthday that like she really wants, like can't get for herself.
Right.
And this is
a very unique gift.
Yeah. So we are going to be doing, at least for right now, 5 new episodes.
Yes.
So specifically for her birthday, but anybody else is welcome to listen to. In fact, I hope that
you will. Yes, this is for everyone. but what the kind of the impetus for it and what really caused us to carve out time. Because, you know, I mean, we didn't have nearly as much going on in 2020 as we do now.
We didn't have jobs. We didn't have kids.
Is Alexi's mom's birthday. So happy
That's
birthday,
right.
Cindy. And we're back.
Yes.
And we tried, it's foggy now. In the middle of last summer, I think we tried to do an episode in our kitchen. I mean, it's on our, you know, it's online. But that proved to be more complicated than we thought. Between moving all the recording equipment into the kitchen and making sure both our children, which, by the way, we have a boy who's almost 2. His name is Vinny. And then we have a little girl who's almost 1, and her name is Ivy.
Well, yeah, she's...
I'm just trying to round up because it changes every month.
It does.
Yeah, she's 8 months old, but she... you know, it's closer to 1 than it is to 0.
Yeah, and it'll get there very quickly. As
yes.
we found out, they grow way faster than we would like.
Yes. Yes, they do. So so we've been very busy, but this is such a special memory and a fun thing that we started doing and took maybe more seriously than we thought we might, you know, at the beginning. So doing this podcast is a really fun hobby, I guess, for me and Alexi. And so it really feels great to continue to do this. So here we are. And we are revisiting a coffee roaster called Gimme Coffee, G-I-M-M-E. We had the main thing that sticks out in my mind from when we first featured them on our podcast, I guess a couple of years ago, was that another one of our listeners, Joel, really appreciated the fact that they had a bird-friendly, a lot of times there's cutting down trees is involved when coffee farming is done, and so there was a specific coffee, I can't remember which country or which region, but there was one that was kind of had this certification of being bird friendly. In other words, they had done the coffee farming, but without removing trees.
Was it somewhere in South America? That's
yeah.
Okay.
That sounds right. So we are back with Gimme Coffee today. They were one of the people that were kind enough to send us a free bag of coffee, whatever that South American coffee was originally. And so, we have one called Stargazer, and this is a blend of African and South American coffees. I don't know the exact countries, but, this might be, I try to always do something a little different. Have a new facet of coffee that I can talk about for each podcast because there's so much to it, and just like steak and barbecue and wine and tea. I mean, there's if you get deep enough into the hole, then you can. There's like a never ending amount of really interesting things that you can learn about the product itself, but also, and coffee is the perfect example, you learn about the world, you learn about culture, you learn about history through the coffee, because that, because it all is being, you know, created in that context. Mm-hmm. So today, the thing that I would just like to point out is that up to this point, I don't believe I had done anything other than single origin coffees, which means Kenya, Guatemala, you know, Brazil.
We haven't done any.
Indonesia. I think every time we did, we tasted a coffee. There may have been an exception, but I know in my mind I was focusing on single origin coffees. And the reason being is that you get to taste exactly what the coffee from that area tastes like, which then once you start tasting multiple coffees shows you, oh, wow, this really is so different. You know, we're not talking about flavored coffees. We're not adding vanilla or hazelnut. It's just the coffee itself. And there's so much variety, just like you would have, you know, bananas from the Philippines, I'm sure taste different from bananas from a different country in some small way. If you eat enough bananas, then you know that. So
Vinny could probably tell us the difference.
Exactly. Vinny loves bananas. He loves babas. But yeah, today we're having our first blend, and it's called the Stargazer. And like I said, it is featuring it, when you get a bag of a blend of coffee, the coffee is a mixture of maybe two or three different, or maybe more kinds of coffee from around the world. And the purpose of that is to create a flavor profile just using those different coffees that is desired. So you and I went to a wine class a few years ago, and it was the topic of that wine class was blends, wine blends, and anyone who is into drinking wine knows that there are many, you know, red blends, white blends, all this stuff, and the reason for doing that in wine is the same in coffee, and that is to say, okay, we like how this Ethiopian coffee is really maybe bright, but on its own it's a little too bright for our morning blend, so we want to add a little bit of Indonesia to kind of add some what's the girth, to add some some heft, some to just balance out the brightness. Sure. We don't want it to taste like orange juice coffee. We want it to be have the brightness, but also a little bit of the syrupy depth that maybe an Indonesian. And that's just an example. I mean, you'll get such a wide variety of flavor profiles even within any given country, but that is an example of what someone might do for like a morning blend, a breakfast blend. And that is what this Stargazer from Gimme Coffee is. It's an attempt at a good, you know, coffee to drink in the morning. So let's taste it before I go on, so that I don't ruin the surprise. And as every time, so we're having the Stargazer blend from Gimme Coffee. We're going to taste it right now, and after we taste it, Alexi is going to do her tradition of guessing what the tasting notes were listed as.
On a side note, I was wondering what happened to this mug.
It's here in the, the studio. All right.
Cheers. Ooh. Okay.
Well, what do you think?
And you have the tasting notes pulled up right now?
I'm looking right at them. Okay. Stargazer Fair Trade Organic.
You're supposed to, breathe out through your mouth to get the...
Through your nose, probably. Okay.
Okay, so the first one I'm getting, which I know it's not going to be right, but maybe popcorn? Maybe butter?
Okay.
Anything close to that?
So butterscotch is listed.
For real?
It is.
Okay.
Which is very, very interesting tasting note.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe.
Butter, interesting. I did not taste butter, so I'm tasting... mostly like cinnamon and chocolate, which is
okay. I kind of get the cinnamon, maybe a little bit. Chocolate. Okay, but so this morning I drank like chocolate flavored coffee.
Oh.
So maybe that's why I'm not getting.
Yeah.
let's see.
If I could make rules, I would make it a rule that you would not drink that coffee before this podcast.
Noted. All right.
Look, very good job with the butterscotch.
Yeah. Maybe like some kind of citrus?
Not seeing any citrus.
Okay.
So their tasting notes listed on the bag are candied almonds, chocolate, raspberry preserves, and butterscotch.
Okay. Wow. Interesting.
I don't get any fruit in this one.
Really? Don't taste it. Yeah. I was really like kind of like stretching to get the fruit flavor.
Okay.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Here's their description that they list on the bag of Stargazer. It says, like thousands of stars beaming majestic light through the dark, expansive regions of the cosmos and laying themselves across your wandering gaze. Stargazer is a wondrous journey of flavor, announcing bright and sparkling notes of sweet fruit which fade to dense blanket of chocolate, creating a complex but well-balanced experience. Stargazer is a perennial favorite that perfectly complements the serenity of the Finger Lakes. As part of our Rally Blend series, a portion of the proceeds of all sales go to of Stargazer provide unrestricted funding for nonprofit and grassroots organizations local to Gimme and our producer partners working towards sustainable, equitable, and long-term change.
Hmm.
Yeah. So it's a really good tasting coffee.
Yeah.
I always like it when our tasting notes are different from the listed ones, just because it shows that everyone tastes coffee a little bit differently. And also, as we have talked about many times before, as coffee cools down, which it is cooling down as I wax eloquent about the coffee before we drink it, it changes. In fact, one of my favorite things to do is actually let a cup of coffee sit all day and drink it the next day when it's just room temperatures and it's been sitting there. And a lot of times it's really good. It's like iced coffee.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. You did that, the other day when I had left a pot of coffee on all day.
Well, that was different. That wasn't just leaving it out. That was letting it actually, letting it toast. Anyone who has a coffee maker knows how this works. If you have a pool of coffee in the bottom of a Mr. Coffee style coffee maker in the glass carafe, if the burner goes on all day, it slowly the water burns off, and then you get this syrupy stuff at the bottom, which sometimes it just burns to a crust, but sometimes it's like before it burns, it's just a very concentrated kind of coffee. So the other day I poured some out and drank it. And I had made it. I had made it the batch of coffee using one of. I think it was the Stargazer blend, actually.
Oh, okay.
And it tasted really good. But that's a very unique. I mean, as far as I know, no one is doing that. The closest thing would be espresso because it's concentrated. Sure. Okay. But with espresso, it's still, you're not trying to burn it necessarily. But it was. But it had like a toasty burnt flavor that I really liked. So in a future episode, I think it would be really cool to just experiment. Maybe side by side, brew it normally, and then brew it with the toasted bottom of the carafe coffee swill that I personally liked so much.
Yeah.
So that's Stargazer. And before we get to the crime, I did want to talk a little bit about the Gimme Coffee Roasting Company. I went back and listened to our episode that we originally did on Gimme Coffee, and I just kind of had read a blurb on their website about how they were on the forefront of creating they were kind of like paving the way with making a barista union for the workers. So I read about that, and this all kind of developed between the time we did that original episode and now.
Yeah.
But it really turned into sort of a nightmare. And it's very pertinent to talk about unions because there's a lot. This year has been one of the most, union activity has been very, very making a lot of news.
Automotive industry and all
automotive
that,
in particular, but a lot of unions are either there's a lot going on. So, I have to give a shout out to a journalist in Ithaca, New York, which is where Gimme is located, and where there's a publication called the Ithaca Voice. I don't know if they're print or if it's online only, but there is a journalist by the name of Jimmy Jordan who, in August of 2022, published an article. Or wrote an article all about the union at the Gimme Coffee Cafe. And there are a few cafes. There's one by the college. There's a couple other locations. But I'm going to take a very, very long article and sort of try to be as concise as I can because it's a ton of information. But I did want to give a shout out to this journalist, Jimmy Jordan, because as I was reading the article, a lot of times you kind of sense a bias right away as you're reading. But as I was reading this article, I was in the middle of it and I was like, well, whose side is he on? Because obviously it's a story about a union.
Yeah.
And so there were people who were pro and there were people who were against the union. And I got to the end and I thought to myself, wow, like this is a real piece of journalism. He just told the story from both sides and lets the reader come to their own conclusion.
Yeah.
So I really appreciated that. You don't see that too often in my experience. And
right.
So good on him.
Good job, Jimmy.
I'm not gonna try to give you a timeline of everything because a lot happened in a few years, but basically there was a barista by the name of Caleb Hathaway, who was working at Gimme Coffee. And shortly after getting hired, he realized that there was a very large disparity between, including tips, what you would make at one location and the other as a barista. So one place he was making like $19 an hour and the other place he was making like $13 an hour or something. Anyway, there was a big difference. And he also was unhappy with some of the dynamics between management and the baristas, and so he decided to start a union. There's a bunch of stuff that you have to do to start a union. Obviously, you have to be like certified by this board. I don't know if it's a state board or if I think it's within each state has like a board that certifies. Okay, you're a union now. So he did all that stuff, and he was able to end the management at the cafe and from Gimme, like the CEO, was very in favor of this at the beginning, but as the union became instated and It didn't take very long before there was a lot of friction. One of the things that so this guy Caleb was kind of like head of the union, and he was directing things, and there were a lot of employees in the coffee shop that were both baristas and like supervisors, and he and this Caleb guy, he basically told them that they couldn't be a part of the union.
Okay.
So there was this, whereas, they wanted to be involved with it. They wanted to be involved with decision making and stuff. And he basically said that, no one who has a name, who has a title, anything other than barista can be in this union.
Okay.
So that created some division.
Yeah.
And things really just kind of down spiraled. There was a lot of, a lot like there were the demands for the hourly wage kept going up. They said at one point that the union said, we want to get rid of tips, which what that means, of course, is not getting rid of tips, because in an area where coffee culture is strong, people are always going to tip right. you. It's just saying, okay, we need like a $6 raise. So that's when the coffee shop was like, well,
I'm like, how can a really coffee shop afford that?
You yeah. know? It's what like, a lot of people don't, we've talked about this in the podcast before, but coffee has consistently gotten more expensive and more expensive mm-hmm. for the past like 15 years. But, you know, talking to Tony, my friend Tony on the podcast one time, the profit margin is very, very small. Mm-hmm. When you're paying for, you know, a lot of what you're paying for when you buy coffee, especially, you know, high-end coffee yeah. is all the work that it takes to make sure that it's that much better. It does mean having a barista or a supervisor flying over to that country and staying in that country and working with the farmers and saying, okay, this, we want more of this kind of coffee, yeah. less of this kind. The kind of stuff that you just can't do a Zoom call, you can't send an email, especially when you have a language barrier mm. that's very significant. So then just like hiring someone to roast it on a really nice roaster, they cost tens of thousands of dollars. You've got distribution, you've got marketing, you've got tax, you've got, you know, everything. And so I was reading this whole article thinking, I personally was more sympathetic toward the company because I felt like they were kind of being, demonized by this guy who, by the way, he ended up, after he created like a giant mess at the company, he just left. And the union dissolved later, but he actually started his own company. And then lo and behold, that company just yeah. kind of like, shuts down like
Why
a year or two
later.
Why did
he leave?
So that he did give a statement to the journalist saying something like he was proud of his time as a barista at Gimme Coffee, but it was just time for him to move on. So
I'm glad I created a huge mess.
Once you know, just like anything with any government regulated thing, you know, once you start a union, it's very complicated to end it. Another thing that was going on was, which, you know, isn't anyone's fault at the coffee shop or anything, but the pandemic was going on. Mm-hmm. Of course, coffee is this thing where it's like you rely heavily on people coming into the shop, you know, buying stuff, and it's personal aspect, the relational aspect is very high. Well, that wasn't going on in 2020 and in much of 2021 in Ithaca, New York. So there were a lot of people who were in the union, but so the union was starting to take hold as COVID happened and then the pandemic happened. And so a really weird thing happened where once it became possible for people to work in person in the store, the company also gave some employees the option to stay home and be on like the top of the list once they felt comfortable working again.
Okay.
But weirdly enough, most of the people who decided to go back to work in the early stages were very in favor of dissolving the union.
Yeah.
And many of the people who wanted to stay home longer away from the job were pro-union. Well, so yeah. that was, you can understand how you would be like working every day and thinking to yourself, like, I don't like the complication of this. Yeah. I don't like what this has done. I don't like the division of this. And then the people that aren't here are preventing us from having a better, what we perceive to be a better environment. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I'm gonna post the article in the information below this podcast so that someone, if anyone's interested yeah. in reading the whole story, they can, you know, again, kind of come up with their own conclusion. But yeah, that's something that happened in the time between. So the union was instated and then dissolved in the time that we. Between the time that we reviewed Gimme Coffee for the first time and today, the time we're reviewing it for the second time.
Yeah.
Starbucks has, in certain places, if not all over the country, they have a union which happened a little bit after this. I don't know much about that. I'll have to research that some other time. Yeah. As far as I know, it's something that Starbucks corporate is totally, they've maybe even like started it. And it's just something to ensure that they're, you know, kind of like an outside audit almost of saying, okay, well, we know that we're treating our employees fairly because our talks with whoever's the board of the union are all in harmony and everyone agrees that this is fair treatment. Starbucks has always been at the top of the list of companies that people want to work for. I've worked for Starbucks. They pay well. The benefits are very famous. for a job you can do without any sort of needing to any sort of like
education
or accreditation or anything. You can just make coffee and it's a good job. So that's the little story on the unionization of baristas and then the de-unionization.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Do you know what that guy is doing now?
I don't.
Yeah, he's probably not working at a coffee shop.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to hire him if I owned a coffee shop. Yeah, and you know, there's just people like that who sometimes kind of...
The company that he started, was that a coffee shop or was it something else?
It was a coffee shop in New York.
Okay, yeah. Huh,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
So Stargazer from Gimme, great coffee.
It's good, it's really good.
It's good coffee for the morning. I wasn't able to taste any of the candied almonds either. I think when we originally tasted the other one, we had the marzipan loaf that Katrina had made.
Oh, okay. Swedish almond cake.
Swedish almond cake, yeah.
Oh, that was the episode with the Stockholm syndrome.
Oh, that was.
Yeah.
So, good coffee. So I'm going to keep sipping on.
Now that it's cooling down, I feel like more of the tasting notes are coming out. Do you get that a little bit?
No. I'm not kidding.
Never mind.
Now that you've been talking for 15 minutes.
No, thank you for doing all that reading and, you know, summarizing the article and everything.
Yeah. I thought it was really just interesting to read about.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Yeah, always new stuff going on with coffee.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously.
Our first blend is, I'm pretty sure it's our first, at least it's, I remember early on there were some coffee roasters that sent us like 3 or 5 bags of coffee. So among those, there might have been a blend. I don't know. I mean, so in the studio here, we actually have a lot of the bags from our podcast that are just pinned to the wall. It's a wall that it's okay to pin things to the wall. I am seeing a couple blends there. Okay. But I don't, but I know that I never really focused on blends before. Right, I never really talked about it. So we got a Colombia, we got a Guatemala, Ethiopia, Yerche, Ethiopia, Guatemala, Gayab. The Guatemala, you're right. That's the one that we did from Gimme. I'm just looking at it right now on the wall.
Yeah.
When you're doing an audio only thing, you have to say why you're
describe your surroundings.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm actually gonna hang on one second. I'm gonna take off my sweater.
Okay. Alexi is taking off her sweater.
I always forget how hot it gets in this room.
A little toasty in here,
And of course, I wore my biggest, fluffiest.
Yeah. It's very cold outside today. Yeah. It's only November 28th, but it was very warm last week. It was like in the 50s a couple weeks ago, but now it was like 9 degrees this morning. Yeah. I remember seeing on my phone. So yeah, today is... I can understand why you would have worn a big, fluffy, white turtleneck sweater. And it is warm in here.
Yeah,
so especially when you start drinking coffee and you start thinking about...
getting excited about murder.
All right. So I'll let you take the floor.
So this is exciting. You know, I'm happy to be back in the studio, you know, doing this thing. I feel like it's...
back in the saddle.
I feel like it's 2020 again. But it's so much better than 2020. I think we can all agree.
Yes.
For many, many, many reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so weird. I'm just saying this parenthetically, but I mean, I'm sure everyone can relate to this. Like, the time has not passed so much to where I go to the grocery store or play a gig at a restaurant and don't think like, you know, a couple of years ago, like either this place was closed or the tables were all, you know, changed.
You had to wear
a mask no matter what the servers, you know, think about servers having to wear masks.
I can't imagine like how hot you get when you're a server and like, yeah. That'd be horrible.
Yeah. Very weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm very, very glad that that's not going on anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's get to it.
Yeah.
So today we are going to be talking about the Hall Mills murders.
Okay.
So this is an old crime.
Okay.
And I specifically picked an old crime because I know my mom really likes the old ones.
Ooh. All right. Happy birthday.
She's a big fan of the, you know, 1800s, 1900s.
What do you think it is that she likes that?
I think, and then
you and your mom are extremely, extremely close, so I'm guessing you have a good idea.
I do, and it's kind of the same, like, I also like to do old crimes, because, and this is going to maybe sound, I don't know, it sounds just terrible, but I feel like when it's something that's far removed, like hundreds of years in the past, you can talk about it in more of like a light, kind of fun way.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's something that happened 5 years ago, it's like, ugh.
Too soon.
Like, these people are still, like, you know, family members are still around, and it's just not the same.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Our podcast, compared to most true crime podcasts, is much more lighthearted than some of them are very, very dark, and we just don't go down that road.
Yeah. Sometimes. For sure.
So someone might be surprised to, you know, with some of the crimes we've done. But yeah, I mean, some people really dig, like, embrace the very worst sides of them.
Yeah. It's interesting, too. It's funny because, like, when we started doing this podcast, it was, you know, 3 years ago before we had kids. And back then, you know, I would hear about crimes, you know, that, like, involved children.
Yeah.
And, I mean, of course, terrible, you know, horrible. But it's like, I could still, like, you know, hear about this stuff. I could read about it. I think we even did a couple podcasts. And like, now after having kids, like, if I'm reading about a crime that I'm thinking about doing and there's like a child involved in it, no.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I can't even read about that stuff anymore. Like, I can't watch interrogations about it.
Wow.
It's like,
wow.
It's just very different.
Yeah.
You know?
I can relate to that.
Yeah. So we will not be doing any crimes like that in the future, for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Sensitivity is good.
No, of course not. Yeah. And like I said, it's not like before I had kids, it was like I was cool with it. You know what I mean? Like, right. Of course, it was very disturbing, but it's just different. And I think anybody who has kids can understand that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Even with all the, like, modern day Netflix dramas and all the crazy stuff, there's still something, as far as violence and just really messed up stuff goes, there's like, you can tell there's still a taboo where there's certain things that they just can't,
right?
They just won't do.
And I'm glad.
Yeah. Like, I think we need something.
Yeah. It always, know, like, you know, children lines. And like pets, like animals.
Yeah. Pets is,
you
the,
know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. People. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
because they're innocent, you know. Just
yeah. Well, yeah. our we have two cats. One of them does not act very innocent, but yeah.
I don't think either of them act very innocent.
No, that's true.
All right.
We were just talking last night about how I've been living in a house with an animal that hates my guts and would probably kill me if she could, but it's just normal to me.
But after he feeds 10 years. Her. He cleans her litter box.
I do. Yeah.
Oh, the love. It's love. All right. Okay, so the Hall Mills murders. This happened in the early 1900s. So this murder has everything. It has murder.
What is that from? This has...
This club host.
Stefan, yeah.
Okay. Stefan from SNL.
SNL.
One of the few funny things from SNL.
Yes, yes.
This club has everything. All right, murder, deceit, illicit affairs, and a pig lady.
And garden gnomes.
pig lady. A pig lady. So we'll get to that. Did you ever read the book The Pig Man back in like high school?
I did not.
Okay. You know, I just thought of it.
What's it about?
It's about these like teenagers who like befriend a man who they call a pig man.
Is it kind of like the Elephant Man where it's just...
I can't remember. I have to read it again. I can't remember, but I remember it was like...
Do you remember the book that you read?
I remember it was kind of sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched Elephant Man when I was a teenager. It was very sad.
Yeah, that is sad.
Yeah. But William Merrick.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But it's really actually kind of a beautiful story too in the pain of it. But yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
All right. Pig Man. Okay. Pig Lady. All right. So I'm going to get into a little bit of background on one of the families that's involved in this case.
Okay. Can I say Pigman instead of
Pigman? Pigman.
Pigman.
Sure.
Okay.
Absolutely. But it's a pig lady.
Oh, right. For this one.
Yeah. All right. So Francis Stevens and his wife, Mary Carpenter, both came from extremely affluent and wealthy East Coast families.
Okay.
So their families were full of politicians, you know, members of the New York Stock Exchange, business owners, famous authors. And Mary was related to one of the founders of Johnson & Johnson. So a lot of money in this family. And Francis, the husband, was a second lieutenant in the Union Army. He was wounded and held prisoner at a war camp in Virginia in 1863, but was able to get out later that month. So then he and Mary ended up marrying 5 years later, and they had three children.
How did they meet?
I think they were both part of these like wealthy
kind of elite
families.
Yeah.
So I think that was probably, you know,
yeah.
Maybe they were kind of expected to.
Right. A joining of alliances.
Exactly. The power family.
Right. The story where it's not the rich person crossing cultural lines
right.
to marry the poor person.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. So they got married. They had three children. In 1869, their first child, a son named Henry, was born. 3 years later, another son, William, or Willie, was born. Siluella. And finally, 2 years later, in 1874, they had a daughter named Frances. So the family, it's a little bit unclear, but they were kind of back and forth between South Carolina and New Jersey. So I think they maybe had homes in both places because they were so wealthy. And
okay. So the Francis was named
that.
After the dad?
Her father, yeah.
Okay.
Spelled differently, but yeah, maybe he was hoping for a third son. I don't know. So anyway, the Stevens children, they spent their childhood in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and the family lived in a huge, beautiful mansion. It's a really nice house.
Nice. Good for them.
Yeah. That's it. No. So the oldest son, Henry, married a woman named Ethel Gibson in New Jersey in 1901. And the younger of the brothers, Willie, never married. So he was kind of an interesting guy. He had trouble keeping jobs, and he was said to probably have some sort of a mental condition. Although back in those days, you know, it wasn't diagnosed because they just didn't do that then. But he was described as being very eccentric, kind of odd, just kind of like sort of a weird guy.
Yeah.
So the sister, Frances, ended up marrying a man named Edward Hall in 1911. So Frances was 37 at the time and Edward was 30. So she was robbing the cradle.
Wow.
Now, Edward wasn't much of a looker.
Was Frances a looker?
But no, she was not.
Oh, okay.
She was not a looker. But she was wealthy, and she had a lot of connections.
Okay.
So, you know, and I don't know if she made a good Bigos, but probably not, because I don't think she was from Poland.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she had a lot of connections, and, you know, Edward was new in town. He was looking to make those connections. He grew up in New York, and he studied theology in Manhattan. And after,
do you know where he studied theology?
The Manhattan Theology I don't know. I mean, I could probably look it up, but I didn't. It's funny because I prepared this crime like over a month ago.
Oh.
So as I'm like, you know, kind of going through it, I'm probably going to be like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
What a magnificent turn of events.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember a lot of this. So.
Yeah. I studied theology at Moody in Chicago. So
yeah.
I'm just curious what theological institution.
Yeah, do you know of any that are in Manhattan?
I don't.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I could look it up. But.
Many of them since that time have gone from downtown locations to suburb locations, so it could very well be like a well-known name that hasn't been located in Manhattan for decades.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Okay, so after moving to New Jersey Edward became a minister at St. John the Evangelist Episcopal Church.
Okay.
In New Brunswick. That is a mouthful.
Yeah.
And that is where he and Frances met. She was a Sunday school teacher.
Uh-huh.
So godly woman, nice lady. So from the outside looking in, Frances and Edward seemed to have a pretty good life. They were well-connected. They were well-liked in the community and at the church. You know, Frances was classy and elegant. She was, you know, just, you know, like a nice upper-class lady.
Mm-hmm.
And Edward was extremely intelligent and charismatic. They lived in the beautiful mansion that Frances had grown up in.
Oh.
And
what precipitated them taking over their parents?
I want to say, and I may have included it in here, but I think the parents left it to her.
Okay, to her only.
Yes.
Okay.
There was some issue with the older brother. They had some sort of a fight over the inheritance.
Oh.
There was something. And I may have put that in here. I can't remember. But the younger brother, Willie, lived with them.
Okay. Okay. They kind of took care of him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Exactly. So they lived a life of, you know, luxury, nice things. They had housekeepers. And they never had any children, but they had Willie living with them. So I feel like he was kind of like a child in a way.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't really able to take care of his own money or affairs.
Do you know much else about Willie? Like what his interests were?
Silly Willie. Yeah. He liked to hang out and give candy to neighborhood kids.
Are you serious? For real?
Yeah, he really did. And he would also, like any money he had, he would spend it on food and beer for local firefighters.
Wow.
And maybe
he was like the local, like not Robin Hood. But.
Yeah, so I think people liked him because he was always giving them.
How could you not?
Yeah, treats and stuff. Yeah. Like neighbor giving candy to the neighborhood kids, maybe a little creepy, but I don't know. Maybe he was, you know.
There's a right way and a wrong way to do it.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Hopefully he wasn't buying beer for the neighborhood kids.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you know, that's kind of, he just liked, you know, going out socializing with
fun.
Yeah, neighbors and stuff. So that's nice. He also liked guns, but we'll get to that later.
Okay.
Candy and guns.
Conversation for a little later.
All right. So yeah, Edward and Frances, very happy. However, in 1918, Edward began to have a little bit of a wandering eye.
You mean literally, like his eye started?
He started going to get. He developed a lazy eye.
Okay.
No. So there was a congregant named Eleanor Mills, and Eleanor was, she was 30 years old. She had married a man named James at the age of 17. And
at her age of 17?
Her age of 17.
Was he much older than her? Or?
I think he was around her age.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit. I mean, he was probably a little bit older.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't think significantly older. They had two young children. Her husband was a sexton in the church. Do you know what that is?
Like, sort of like a deacon, like someone.
No,
who...
that's like, I had never heard of that term. It's, they're basically, well, I don't, they're in charge of like overseeing the church building and the graveyard.
Okay.
And all that
stuff. Like a maintenance.
Yeah,
person.
Exactly. Okay. So yeah, maintenance. Yeah. And Eleanor was very involved in the church as well. She sang in the choir, and she was pretty. She was younger, and she caught Edward's lazy eye.
Okay.
The two began a friendly relationship that soon turned quite improper.
So they're both the same age at this point?
No, I think Edward was old. So he married Frances when he was 30, and that was in 1911, and this is now so it's 7 years later. So now he's 37.
He's 37.
And now he's looking at the 30-year-old.
Right, there's a 30. Yeah.
Interesting.
Wow, there's a pattern here.
Wow. Okay. So yeah. So they begin they begin this relationship. And of course, they were not open about their affair.
Yes, I mean, most people are not.
But gossip quickly spread through the congregation and the town.
Well, how did people find out?
I think they saw them canoodling, you know, maybe Eleanor staying after choir practice.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it just kind of became like, you know, what's going on with them? They seem a little too friendly.
Right. Those days before texting, you had to be a little more... it was probably a little easier to tell when people were canoodling, having wandering eyes and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly, because I couldn't just send a flirty text or whatever.
Couldn't write a calligraphy ink pen letter without it getting intercepted.
This? Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
So yeah, it was pretty much known after a while that the two were kind of seeing each other.
Really?
Yes.
Did Eleanor know this?
Well.
Or how long did it take her to figure it out?
Well, the affair continued for about 4 years.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So, and I don't know if Edward was having other affairs during this time, but Eleanor was definitely his main side piece.
Yes.
And I think Frances kind of like heard these rumors, but I think that she didn't want to believe them. She was probably in denial because she was older. She was very like, she had a high status. She probably didn't want to have a divorce, you know?
Right.
I mean, by now she's in her, mid-40s?
Right, yeah.
So yeah, I think it would have looked bad for her to be divorced, especially because Edward was very highly respected. He was, you know, this like holy man.
Right.
You know, so...
And I wonder what the laws were back then as far as money after like a divorce.
Because women...
If she would have retained that or if he would have gotten it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because this was
a prenup.
Slightly before women's suffrage, was it? 1920, was that? Or am I?
I think it was the 10s that happened.
I don't know anything about women's suffrage.
I just know I don't want to suffer.
What kind of a woman am I? Okay. So yes, so Frances is in denial. You know, she's turning a blind eye to this. So on the evening of September 14th, 1922, Edward received a phone call from Eleanor. So she was calling the house. So pretty bold, kind of in plain sight, you know. So Eleanor and Edward made plans to meet that evening at 8:15. And this was something that was overheard by one of the housekeepers. So this housekeeper answered the phone. Eleanor asked for Edward, and then she was kind of like listening to their conversation. And I think that Frances at this point knew that he was going out to meet Eleanor because he told her that he had to go talk to her about a medical bill that she had from an operation.
What operation?
She had some sort of operation, and she needed to talk to him about her medical bills.
Well, if you're a pastor, you can easily make up anything like that.
Exactly.
Because,
I need to go meet this person, you know, because they need, you know, my guidance or whatever. Yeah. So, anyway, it got later and later, and Edward had not returned from his outing. So the next day, Frances told some friends and family members about Edward being missing. But she had not notified the police. And I think it was because she was afraid it would make him look bad because I think she kind of knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
So on September 16th, 2 days since Edward had gone missing, a young couple were out at sort of like a lover's lane area and stumbled upon the bodies of two people. And by some accounts, the couple that stumbled upon the bodies was a married man and a teen girl, which is creepy. Really
a teen
weird.
Girl that was not his daughter, I assume.
No, it was his like lover.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Creepy. They immediately left the area and ran to a nearby house and called the police and then fled because yikes.
Yeah.
They didn't want to get caught. So when the police arrived, they discovered that the bodies were that of 41-year-old Edward Hall and 34-year-old Eleanor Mills.
Wow.
So the crime scene was crazy. The bodies had been laid next to each other with their arms touching each other. And there were torn up love letters from Eleanor between them. So someone had torn up letters and just like laid them at the scene.
So it couldn't have been them tearing them up and then getting killed later?
Well, I mean,
why would they? That doesn't make sense. Yeah.
I mean, I guess anything's possible, but. Yeah.
But it was a intentionally arranged crime scene.
Yeah. And Edward's business card was laying by his foot. For some reason.
Okay.
So Edward had been found with his hat over his face and he had been shot once in the head and Eleanor had been shot 3 times in the head.
Now, let's pause here
because
I'm curious. I need you to refresh my memory about the general psychological analysis of what that means to have someone's face covered or uncovered to be shot 3 times or 1 time.
So,
what does that usually signify?
What I would, whenever somebody covers somebody up after a murder, it's typically because they're close to that person and they don't want to see them after they've died.
So we could deduce that whoever the killer is closer to the husband than to the lover.
Possibly, but the fact that she was shot 3 times.
Does that usually indicate closeness?
I feel like the more injuries and stuff kind of shows the more anger towards
blame.
That person.
Yeah.
So, not necessarily. I mean, they could have been closer to Edward and more angry
at
Eleanor.
But it's excessive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where it wasn't excessive with him.
Right. I mean, I think shooting someone in the head is probably excessive.
No, but 3 bullets versus 1 is
yeah, is yeah. For sure. Yeah.
Okay.
And also, there's more. But wait. There's butt weight. Not only had she been shot 3 times, but her tongue had been cut out.
Ooh.
And her throat had been slashed.
Ooh.
So whoever killed her was
yikes.
Real
that
angry.
Is grisly.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I wonder if that had anything to do with her being a singer.
Yeah.
In the choir.
Maybe.
You're never gonna sing again. I don't know. Among the love letters was one that said, "I know there are girls with more shapely bodies, but I do not care what they have. I have the greatest of all blessings, a noble man, deep, true, and eternal love. My heart is his. My life is his. All I have is his. Poor as my body is, scrawny as they say my skin may be, but I am his."
Wow. Dedicated.
Yeah. So she was deeply in.
And it was always in secret. Neither of them
yeah,
ever.
Yeah, I mean, I think as time went on, they were probably a little less careful.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they got a little cocky, nobody's going
to
know about
but
us.
But Eleanor was still going, or Francis was still always going to this church,
yeah,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So, they couldn't really ever.
Yeah. Secret meetings, I guess. I don't know. So once the bodies were found, word got out amongst the town, and a bunch of townspeople came to the scene. Hundreds of people came to the scene. So everybody was touching evidence and basically just completely messed up.
So the cops did not get there until later.
I mean, at one point they were there and then they started, telling people to back off and everything.
Yeah.
But it's
nothing to see here, but wait till
yeah,
late.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know. If you heard there was dead bodies found somewhere, would you want to go and look at it?
No, I would not, but I think you would.
No, I wouldn't.
Oh, you wouldn't?
That's what I'm like. I would not want to see that.
Really?
Yeah.
Not even if it was something that related to years-long town gossip?
No.
People that you knew personally?
I don't know, especially not people I knew.
Yeah, okay. Sorry.
Sorry, I thought you were way more disturbed than you are. No, I wouldn't. I would not run to see that.
Okay. Yeah, I wouldn't either.
Yeah. But anyway, so these people were all touching the business card, the letters, passing them around.
So the crime scene is completely
just
unreliable.
Yeah, exactly. And they were even taking bits of dirt and parts of the trees, bark as souvenirs.
Right. Where, did they move the bodies around?
I don't know that they did that.
Because how much of the way that the crime scene was
right,
is described as arranged
be
relied on?
I think that the police got there pretty quickly. So I think the police were some of the first to arrive.
Because they got there quickly, why didn't they keep everyone
from
messing with
stuff? Well, I think so many people came. It was probably they were outnumbered, kind of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Eventually, I think they ended up getting control of the crime scene. And by that time.
And I suppose by interviewing enough people, you could kind of put something together
sure.
about the way that
yeah.
it was.
And the couple that originally saw them, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could have told them. So, yeah. So. So when Frances was told about her husband's death, she broke down crying. She seemed very upset. And people were questioned after the murder, including Frances, as well as Eleanor's husband, James, but no arrests were immediately made. In fact, the police actually dismissed the idea of James being the killer because he just didn't seem like he had it in him. He was kind of a quiet, nice guy.
Yeah.
Which is I don't know. It's always the quiet ones, right? That's what they say. but the story became very popular, front page news, and in time would gain national attention and be dubbed the crime of the century.
Wow.
So it was a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Front page news nationally?
Yes.
Wow. So everyone
that was probably due to Francis being so, you know, affluent, well, I'm guessing.
Yeah. And, you know, a minister. Right. There's something kind of gruesome about in people's perception of like someone.
Oh, you were supposed to be a holy man.
A holy man doing this and then getting killed. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So let's get to the pig woman. I know we've
I'm baffled as to how that could.
So basically the investigation seemed to be hitting a dead end. But along comes the pig woman to save the day.
Yeah.
Or not. So a couple of weeks after the murder, a woman named Jane Gibson came forward. She was a local hog farmer whose farm was a short distance from where the bodies were found. So she told investigators that on the night of the murder, she heard a dog barking. And when she went to investigate, she saw a man running through the cornfield. So she hopped on her mule,
as was the custom.
Many do, and followed him. And she said that she saw four people arguing, heard gunshots, but then she could not make out who they were. Because I think she was.
And this is how long after the bodies are found?
A couple weeks. A
couple weeks.
Yes,
okay, so not terribly long.
No.
Was it the reason for the delay that she was so secluded that she didn't? It took her a while to know what was.
Maybe, but there might be more reason for the delay.
Okay, sorry, I'll stop.
No, you're fine.
Asking questions.
You can ask all the questions you want. Okay. This is like when Lewis and I are watching a show in the evening. A lot of times I'll ask him questions about like
unanswerable questions like, that I have no way of knowing.
Like, who's that guy? Like, why did they do that? Yeah. And he's like, how would I know that?
Well, and this particular show that we're watching, just the way that it's written is to create like kind of like a, it is to make you wonder about stuff.
Right,
so by definition, it's
funny because when Lewis and I were first dating, he wrote a song about how cute that was that I would do that.
Yeah.
And now he's like, for the love of God.
This is my turn to ask questions that must not be answered.
Right. All right. So she became known as the pig woman, not only because she was a hog farmer, but because her home and her farm were like disgusting.
Oh.
So she might have been like a hoarder, just like kind of a dirty person. So over the next several weeks and months, Jane would give interview after interview with the press, and it was becoming clear that she was just loving the media attention, kind of like a Diane Downs of the pig farm world.
Right.
So she started adding more and more detail to her stories, embellishing, and the police knew that she was not probably a credible witness, but like she was all they had at the time. They didn't really have anything else. Eventually, her daughter came forward and let them know that her mother was a compulsive liar. And none of what she was saying was true.
Why did the daughter not do this originally?
Because it was her mom. I mean, she was probably like...
She didn't know how far she would take it.
Yeah. I think eventually she was just like, this has to stop.
Wow.
Yeah. Because all these, articles are getting published.
Was the pig woman's... were her details seeming to go in any direction of incriminating anyone?
I think they were just
always
changing. It was like, and I forgot
people
about
kept
this
listening.
Thing. And yeah. So anytime she was like lonely and wanted attention, she would call up the paper and be like, oh yeah, and I forgot to say that this,
Did she have a phone?
I don't know, probably. I don't know.
Interesting.
This was 19... I don't know. Phones existed. Yes.
But
probably not everybody had one.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, so with no new leads and no other witnesses, the case kind of went cold. Okay. Until a newspaper called the New York Daily Mirror, which was basically kind of like a tabloid at the time, featured an interview
with... Sounds so classy for a tabloid.
Right? So they published an interview with the husband of Francis's housekeeper. So remember the housekeeper that heard the phone call?
Yes.
So her husband came forward and did this interview, and he stated that his wife was told to keep quiet about everything regarding Edward's disappearance and even bribing her, Francis.
Oh.
Yes. So Francis allegedly told her housekeeper that she believed that her husband and Eleanor were planning to elope.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this came out in the same article, but initially Frances said that she and her brother Willie had been home all night on the night in question. However, later she said that she had actually gone out at 2 a.m. to look for him.
Oh.
So that's kind of suspicious.
Yep.
Yes. So anyway, after the Daily Mirror published this new information, it reignited the interest among the public. And it
so the tabloid was well respected as an actual source of new information.
Maybe it was just a thing where, you know, this case had gone cold. This was all, I mean, they had very little information.
Do you think Francis had any protection from the mainstream media?
Maybe.
Being like an elite member of it and being connected to politicians.
Yeah, that could be.
So the only people that would report on it was this
tabloid.
This trashy tabloid.
That could, that's a good point, actually. So anyway, the governor ordered that the case be reopened in light of this article.
Right.
So as a result, Frances Hall, her brother Willie Stevens, and her brother Harry Stevens, as well as her cousin Henry Carpenter, were all arrested. So Frances, for obvious reasons, I mean, it's her husband who's having an affair. So Willie's fingerprints were actually found on the business card that was found at the crime scene. However, all these people touched it, including him, because I think he went down to the crime scene that it was like, that meant nothing. Everybody in the town's fingerprints were on this card.
Right.
I don't even know how they would.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like they kind of made that up.
A business card is not a big item.
Yeah. He also owned a .32 caliber pistol, which was the same type of gun that was used in the murder.
Okay.
However, it was later discovered that his gun had been altered in a way that made it impossible to fire, so he could not have used it.
Is that true?
Yes, because I believe his brother like altered it so he could have it because he liked guns, but because he had, you know, some issues, he didn't want him to accidentally shoot somebody or himself or whatever. So Harry,
do you know what they did to the gun to keep it from shooting?
I think he like disabled the shooting mechanism.
Okay.
I can't remember what it was.
We'll have a ballistics expert in for that question.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I think I said her brother's name was Harry. It's actually Henry.
Okay.
I don't know why I said Harry.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I thought there was just a new, a new suspect.
So Henry Stevens, the other brother, was an expert marksman. This is why they were questioning him.
Yeah.
And although he had maintained a close relationship with Willie, he and Frances had had that falling out because of the inheritance. So it's unlikely that he would risk his freedom to kill her husband.
Right.
Like, why would he?
His motivation.
Yeah, exactly. He also had an alibi. He was on a fishing trip at the time of the murder, which was corroborated by multiple people.
No.
So, not Henry.
Yeah.
And then Henry Carpenter, the cousin, it seemed like the only reason he was considered a suspect is because he was related to Frances.
Yes.
And the pig woman said the night of the murder, she heard a woman yell, "Henry." So who knows? This woman was crazy.
But at this point, her testimony is not being taken seriously, right?
Not really at this point.
After the daughter.
She ends up testifying.
She does testify.
Yes. So we'll get to that, but anyway, the cousin Henry Carpenter was released and he never went to trial.
Okay.
So the trial and, all three siblings ended up going to trial, even the brother with the alibi.
For individual trials?
No, they all went together, I believe. Okay. Yes. Yes. And the trial began on November 3rd of 1926.
Okay.
So the trial consisted of just like a hodgepodge of like misfit witnesses, like nobody super reliable. A lot of these people ended up changing their stories. They just weren't credible.
Yeah.
It was just like a mess. So Willie and Frances both testified, and they were both said to have kept a very calm composure throughout the trial. So they were probably the most reliable witnesses in this, or not witnesses, but reliable people testifying during this whole trial. And the highlight of the day was when the pig woman testified.
Yeah.
So,
I bet the courtroom was full for
that. Listen, this is pretty interesting.
Was Frances represented by some big-time lawyer?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm assuming probably.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I mean, I didn't include that in here, but yeah probably.
Okay, pig woman.
Pig woman. Okay, so when she was first approached to be a witness, she said that she did not want to. Which is surprising because, you know, she was all about the attention. But she eventually changed her mind. But by the time the trial rolled around, Jane had fallen ill Jane is the pig woman.
Jane, okay.
Yes. She had fallen ill and she was in the hospital. So they actually rolled her into the courtroom in her hospital bed to testify.
Laying down?
Yes, in her hospital bed.
Wow. Did she speak loud enough for people to hear her?
Well, I don't know. But at one point, she started yelling dramatically that Francis had committed the murders. And then she fainted in like, you know, a very dramatic fashion.
Yeah, yeah.
So they, you know, were trying to revive her and stuff. And then she continued her testimony.
Wow, but
she
just
she came off as just
everybody
unreliable.
Must have been like talking,
yeah,
gasping,
laughing.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
At this point, it's just entertainment
exactly,
for everyone. Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. So anyway, so the trial lasted for exactly 1 month. And on December 3rd of 1926, the verdict was read. All three siblings were found not guilty.
Okay.
And they were free to live their lives.
Wow.
Yeah.
And there was never, no one was ever convicted.
No. So this case to this day is basically a cold case.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think? Do you think if you had to like...
To me, the thing that stands out the most as far as evidence that leads to a suspect is the testimony of the husband of the housekeeper.
Yeah, that Francis told her to keep quiet and all that
right.
stuff. Yeah.
It's not damning, but it's like what the housekeeper doesn't have anything to gain by incriminating, or especially the husband by people needed jobs back then, especially housekeepers.
Right.
Doesn't have anything to gain and a lot to lose by speaking
right.
about possible guilt about their employer.
Mm-hmm.
So I can only assume that he was. And they were doing the right thing by speaking about that.
Yeah.
Doing what they thought was the right thing. And either it was, I mean, based on what you said about the bullet, the three bullets versus the one, the hat covering mm-hmm. the face of the, what would have been her husband.
It right.
It has to have been either Francis or someone that she hired.
Right. Maybe.
To specifically do that.
I want to say like maybe Willie. Like, maybe if Francis, like, gave him a gun, like, well,
yeah.
a working gun.
Yeah.
But then again, like, would he have had the, like, capacity to do
right.
all that, you know?
Right. Yeah, usually, I mean, and maybe, especially back then, it would have been very unusual for a woman to commit a murder with a gun, right?
I mean, yeah, usually,
like
as we've seen,
like going
they,
up to, yeah.
they, like, arsenic and...
Women are usually sneakier yeah. when they kill people.
Right.
Not as direct. Although, I mean, you know, anything can happen.
Unless it was, like, her and Willie together going and...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Aside from that, I mean, it's a completely wide open as far as, like, maybe Eleanor was seeing someone else who was jealous of...
Or maybe it was her husband, because they never
yeah.
really looked
yeah,
into
that's,
that.
That's suspicious that
yeah.
they never looked into that.
Maybe so. It was her husband and Francis together.
But I think if it was the husband, I think that like you were talking about, I think that the crime scene would have looked different as far as it would have been...
yeah, maybe.
More vengeful against the... person that she was with rather than her.
But I mean, what right. happened to her was pretty terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's yeah. I don't, it's
it
all
remains
conjecture.
A mystery.
So Frances
day.
Lived the rest of her life.
Yeah. I believe, free. I want to say she ended up moving to Europe.
See, that it's also, okay. It was definitely Frances. You didn't tell me about Europe.
I think. I'm
yeah,
not 100% sure.
You're out of jurisdiction.
I'm pretty sure that she did.
Yeah.
But I, you know, you could say maybe she just, because this had been such
sure,
national
yeah,
news,
either
maybe
way.
She was just trying to
get away from
like,
the
you know,
circus.
I don't want to deal with this, you know, but.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it was for sure Francis. That being said, it
yeah.
was definitely Francis.
Yes, it had to. I mean. Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That was a, thank you for preparing that crime. That was a fascinating story. And this was a really great return to
yeah.
our.
I think so. Coffee was great. Thank yeah. you for doing all that research.
Yeah.
And we will be back.
We will be back to take our coffee.
With crime.